business for me has become a canvas. It's become an opus that I've been writing. And if you can shift your mentality to think of it that way, it becomes a lot more fun and it becomes a lot more interactive with your side as an artist.
This is Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, a podcast that explores why Montana leads the nation in entrepreneurship and business startups. I'm Arnie Sherman. Creating employment for musicians is one of my passions, says Erica von Kleist. In 2013, this New York City jazz player, arranger, composer, bandleader, and teacher made a life-changing move to Whitefish, Montana. With a bang, Erica began creating opportunities for fellow musicians and music teachers, demonstrating firsthand how an artist can think like an entrepreneur. In 2014, she launched a pair of booking and management companies, the Montana Artist Collective and Groove Trail. These for-profit and non-profit sister companies book paid performances throughout Northwest Montana. Since their inception, the weddings, nursing home stints, jazz summer camps, private events, and school residencies booked by the two companies have created significant ongoing revenue for musicians in Northwest Montana. They've also brought live music to the people who can benefit from it the most. On this week's Can Do, Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, Erica lays out her vision for a biodome of employment for musicians and makes the case for teaching young artists how to synchronize their creative and entrepreneurial grooves to build lasting careers. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So explain for our listeners the difference between the Montana Artist Collective and Groove Trail.
Well, I'll start with their similarities. They're both booking agencies. One of them is for-profit and the other is nonprofit. The Montana Artist Collective, which is doing business as its former name, which is the Northwest Artist Syndicate, is a for-profit company that books for private events and weddings. And the MAC band, which stands for Montana Artist Collective, is a 10-piece wedding band that does private events and weddings throughout the state and employs sort of a roster of great talented musicians who are based in Missoula and the Flathead Valley. And then Groove Trail is the nonprofit organization that books live music for nursing homes and care facilities. Both of these companies have been running for about 5 years, and it's just been quite an adventure to kind of see how these have grown.
Were both or either of these based on an existing model of any sort?
I've been aware of several nonprofits that have booked live music for nursing homes prior to me starting this, but there hasn't been anything in existence in the Flathead Valley. And in terms of a private event booking agency, there are agencies around the country that do that sort of thing. But I did model my MAC band after a band in New York City called the Manhattan Swing Orchestra, which is a wedding band that pulls from a roster of a couple dozen to maybe, you know, 40 or 50 musicians who all know the music and can get called for a gig at any time, depending on availability.
Seems to me that in the work that you're doing, there needs to be an educational component. Do you have one?
Yes. So Groove Trail has sort of a second branch, and that is based in jazz education. This year, we launched a project called the Flathead Ellington Project, and we auditioned high school students from around the valley who have an interest in jazz. And we have a band of 9 students who have been working all year to learn the music of Duke Ellington. I did that in high school with my high school jazz ensemble, and we got to compete at the Essentially Ellington competition at Jazz at Lincoln Center. It was a huge part of my upbringing as a musician. So I wanted to pay that forward to the students here. So they've been working throughout the year on getting their chops together. And believe me, there's been a long way to go. And they have just done a spectacular job. They will be traveling to New York City to perform at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem on May 10th as a group. We couldn't be more excited. We've got 3 band directors going with them and a whole crew of parents and Flathead Valley supporters traveling to New York. And it's going to be a life-changing experience for these kids. So we've been really happy to be able to provide that for them this year.
You're going to have to hold a seminar to explain New York City to them.
I know. I'm going to have a big meeting with them and say, okay, look, you got to, like, you know, keep your wits about you. Can't cross the street at bad time. You know, I just have to make sure that they're going to be cool. But they're going to be fine. And they've got a great team going with them. And they're going to have a blast.
I'm intrigued by your concept of biodome of employment. So what does that mean for you?
Musicians who are freelance, we tend to be working mostly at night, doing bar gigs and private parties. And the nursing home program allows musicians to work during the day. 10:30 in the morning, they go to a care facility in Kalispell or Whitefish and play for an hour for the residents. And it's a paid performance. And so a lot of the musicians in the Valley have come to really appreciate the fact that they can do a gig at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday and maybe even do 2 in one day. And then at night, they can also work their normal gig or get called for a private party as well. So they have this sort of rolling, I call it a biodome of employment, sort of daytime and nighttime. And then also the for-profit company gives back to the nonprofit company. So when we make a great commission on a private event that we've produced, a portion of that goes back into Groove Trail in some capacity.
Why did you decide to venture beyond your successful personal music career to do this?
I love living in New York, and I was there for 12 years. I came to realize that I had kind of met a lot of goals professionally as a performer there. I'd played with a lot of the musicians I'd want to play with. I'd toured the world. And I came to realize that that way of living for me was not sustainable. I didn't want to be in that position as a professionally 30 years from that point. And so I thought, man, is there a way that I can help pay it back and contribute to the lack of regular employment that musicians face? So I had an opportunity to do an orchestra pit gig in Whitefish, Montana with the Alpine Theater Project, which brings musicians and actors in from around the country. And I fell in love with the Flathead Valley of Montana and saw how much support there is for the arts and what an amazing creative scene there is there. And I thought to myself, if there's any business ventures, this might be the place to start.
So you moved there sort of cold turkey, right?
Yeah. Why not? I mean, I had just turned 30 and I thought to myself, well, I don't have a house. I don't have kids. I don't have any pets. I figured if there's any adventure I'm going to go on, this is it. And this is the best time to do it. And it's been an incredible 6 years.
So how do you balance your, because you still continue your personal music. How do you balance that with the entrepreneurial side of your life?
Because you can't do everything, and I've learned the hard way with that, I've kind of had to sort of not change my identity, but sort of think of myself more as a businesswoman for the last few years and kind of put the creative part of me on hold for a couple of years so that I can focus on these projects and the education that I have been getting just from doing them. I've learned a lot about building companies and understanding your community, understanding your market, understanding the legalities and logistics of running these types of organizations. And I've almost treated that as if it were my creative platform. So I have felt very creative doing these businesses. My pendulum is starting to swing, however, and I am going to be recording a new album in May, and I have a number of other creative projects on the go. So I am kind of swinging back to doing more performance-based work, but it's been really wonderful to understand the other side of things.
When you went to Juilliard, did they have any courses on the business side of being an artist?
When I was at Juilliard, there was a music business class. It wasn't a big focus of the curriculum, and there was some great information in the class, but it didn't go into just some of the basics of business. I mean, when you're in college as a music major, that college should be required to teach you the basics of what a 1099 is. Like, what does it mean to be self-employed? I mean, you're just kind of cast into the world after you graduate as a freelance musician. how do you make that work? Like, what are the legalities business-wise? What are the logistics? How do you book yourself? Things like, you need a promo video, you need recordings. How do you market yourself to people who want to hire you? And this is something I'm very passionate about teaching to college students. And I have been going around the country to schools to do lectures and interviews with students and just talk to them about, hey, you got to start thinking with the other side of your brain if you're going to be successful doing this. And this is something that I really wish had been a focus when I was at college.
How did you learn how to teach this, and how did you learn what the business evolution would look like for a musician?
Well, it kind of started when I was a couple years out of college and I started getting my first notices from the IRS saying, you didn't file this and this is incorrect. And I said, I don't know what any of this means. So I went to a great tax guy in the city and he's like, yeah, you know, you're going to owe about $2,500 to the IRS. And I was like, okay. But it was, I wish had I just known about how to deal with this stuff, that wouldn't have been an issue. When you're a musician, you work with several nonprofit organizations. That's kind of how the world works right now. And it's important to understand how a nonprofit functions. I mean, you have people working for these organizations that day to day are actively fundraising to get the money to pay you the money to do that performance or to do that workshop. And I think it would be just to have a better sense of awareness for musicians to understand how a business functions and how a nonprofit functions, I think would just create a stronger team, sort of a symbiosis between the performer and the administrator. And I feel like there's not a line of division. I think there's just a line of misunderstanding oftentimes between those two worlds. So that's something I really, really hope to bridge, because the education I've gotten running a nonprofit from the ground up and all the mistakes I've made there has made me a little bit more aware of some of the work opportunities I've had in the past and that I will have in the future.
How receptive have musicians and artists been to getting this education and training?
I would say 90% have been wonderfully receptive, because I'm a musician. I get it. I'm not an administrator, even though I run these companies. At the essence, I know 100% from what their perspective is on these types of situations when they're going out to perform a gig. So I have their best interests in mind, and they know that I work tirelessly to make sure that they earn a decent paycheck and that they are, you know, it's organized in such a way that keeps all of their logistics in mind. And I get that because I'm a musician. I think one of the things that a lot of musicians don't understand is the basics of marketing themselves. When I first started my booking agency, I kind of went around to a lot of the solo duo acts and a couple of the bands in the Flathead Valley. And I said, okay, great. I'm going to try booking you for private parties, but I need nice pictures. I need you guys to have a website presence and a promo video. And only a handful of the artists actually gave me that material. And there were several of the artists that complained that I wasn't booking them enough. And I said, well, you've never given me anything to be able to send to a client. And just because you happen to be a great guitar player and singer, if I'm trying to sell you for that, if I don't have anything to sell, that bride or that event planner doesn't care who you've played with or the fact that you opened for so-and-so at South by Southwest. If you don't have a video, it doesn't matter. So I think that marketing oneself is a little bit of a disconnect that I have found in dealing with musicians. But I think that is sort of, that learning curve is happening more as video and everything has become so visual, interacting with music now. So I think that that's changing a bit.
Well, also the way media and social media has matured, you know, you have things like VidCon and other platforms where artists now are starting out in social media, building big audiences, and then can start putting a team together that can accomplish what you're talking to them about.
Yeah, exactly. Having that presence and being able to market yourself in the shortest pitch possible. I mean, really, people are going to watch the first 30 seconds of your video. And if you can't hook somebody to want to watch through a minute and a half to 2 minutes, if they can get through a minute and a half, you've probably been able to book that wedding gig. But you have to really understand how to present yourself as an artist in order to make that great first impression.
It's almost like a mini version of The Voice. When the chairs are not turned towards the artist, you got to really catch them pretty early.
You do. You really, man, those 15 seconds are crucial. So that's one of the things I've been trying to let those artists in the Flathead Valley know, as someone who's been trying to provide work for them and employment. You have to be prepared on your own end with those kinds of materials.
For our listeners, explain the Flathead Valley of Montana to them.
The Flathead Valley is one of the most beautiful places on earth. It is this gorgeous valley that is surrounded by huge mountains. It's about 40 minutes drive from Glacier National Park. So you can imagine just snow-capped peaks, glacial lakes. There are several small, beautiful towns. Whitefish, Montana is where I live. There's also Kalispell and Columbia Falls and all these great little hubs of fun new activity. There's new people moving into the valley. There's new restaurants and companies and ideas flowing there. It's very, very idyllic. I feel very lucky to be able to live there. I feel like I'm almost, you know, getting away with with something, being able to fly from there and teach and perform in other places and then be home and work from home and do my passions.
So, I think you deserve to live there.
I should. I hope so. I'm definitely earning it, I think.
You've already alluded, and I assume marketing is the number one challenge in creating employment for musicians. But what other things do you come up against?
Understanding the legalities of a contract. I have helped a lot of local musicians with their contracts. I've consulted lawyers with my contracts as well. But just understanding how to protect yourself as an artist on a gig. You know, little things like, oh, I didn't think about making the client have a tent and it's raining. Okay, well, do you have a clause in there that says that they're required to put you in an indoor location? Well, no, they're just canceling it. Well, do you have a cancellation policy in there? Like, all of these little things add up to having a successful contracted gig. I remember my first contracts early on in my business were a page long or like 3/4 of a page long. They have become 2 pages long, and I have changed the font size to about 9 to fit the verbiage onto 2 pages, because 3 pages looks intimidating. So trying to make sure that all of those bases are covered and knowing just all of the ins and outs and the troubleshooting that you can encounter on these different types of gigs, it just takes years of being in those situations to know what you need to protect yourself with.
And you have to pay attention to the details.
Oh, it's the devil's in the details. It really is. I mean, I did a wedding last September where the wedding timeline just kept dragging on, and we had been on the grounds for 12 hours and they wanted us to keep playing. And I whipped out that contract and I said, we'd love to keep playing, but you have to pay us our overtime. He looked at me and said, you know, well, we've only been playing for an hour and a half. I said, well, we've been waiting here for forever. And so they had to give us a check, and boom, we hit the stage and did another hour for them and rocked their party. And it worked out well, and we got paid, and we felt good about the amount of time that we had put in with the amount that we were getting paid because we had that overtime clause.
Brings to mind a story I'll share with you. Many years ago, I had an event that we were managing called Kids Day, on a safe Halloween event. And we had a tagline called Treat 'em Right, and it attracted interest from Disney. And Disney put up a $100,000 sponsorship, and we were just elated, and we signed the contract. And then after all these events were over in 16 cities, we got a bill from Disney for $80,000. Because in the contract, there was a provision that they provided one score of music, one, you know, appearance of each of the characters, and if there were more appearances, we had to pay for them. And never thought that that would be a problem or an issue, but I didn't pay attention to the details in that case, and we got burned on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's understanding just the overall foresight of the scope of what you're trying to do. From the moment you arrive for that contract to the moment that you leave, you have to kind of troubleshoot all of that and kind of see what that scope is like. And it's kind of a live and learn. My contracts now reflect the the situations I've encountered in all of these different events that I've dealt with. And some of my clients are like, oh, man, you write this in the contract? I'm like, it's in there. No beverages on stage. Like, all of that stuff is because of things that have happened. So, yeah, it's definitely live and learn.
We are speaking today with Erica von Kleist, musician, composer, educator, entrepreneur, and founder of the Montana Artist Collective and Groove Trail. If you had this to do over again, what would you do differently, if anything?
I have a tendency to spread myself too thin. And while the overall concept of having this biodome, so to speak, with supplying employment during the day and then private parties at night, it's been a lot to maintain. And the growth has been slow. I don't know if the growth would have been faster if I had just done one of these things rather than two. But I feel that the symbiosis between these two companies is a success, even though they're still, relatively small. I mean, the nonprofit is a small nonprofit, my for-profit. And we know nobody's like pulling in huge, huge dollars here, but it's functioning. They're not losing money and they're creating the employment, thus fulfilling the goal and making a lot of people really, really happy.
In the business equation, there's supply and demand. So the question really for you is there enough musicians and work in Northwest Montana in the Flathead Valley for your biodome to be completely viable?
Well, with the nonprofit, we can't keep up with demand with the nursing homes. We have a lot of great musicians on our roster, but we're trying to fundraise to make it so these performances are paid fairly. So that's the supply we're trying to create is the funding, but the demand is huge. I mean, these places want live music at least 2 or 3 times a week. And there are, we service about 10 to 12 facilities now, but we have a waiting list of facilities. So that's great. And just the only challenge there is funding. And then with the for-profit, in the state of Montana a couple years ago, I think there were 8,500 weddings. And considering there's 1 million people in the state, I mean, that's a huge industry. I think everyone wants their Pinterest barn wedding and their sunset and their cows and their horses and stuff in their pictures. And there are some beautiful wedding venues here, and it's less expensive to get married here than it is in a lot of other places. So there is no wedding band in Montana. The demand is huge. And so now the Mac Band, having this roster of musicians to pull from, is filling that supply, and it's growing. I mean, this summer we're booked twice as much as we were last summer. So that's good. It's just maintaining the manpower to make it all happen, which is me, and that's challenging.
Sure. And now you're going to have to learn about fundraising.
Well, that's something that I've been slowly getting my chops better at over the last couple of years. I mean, that's a whole skill unto itself. Asking for help, asking for money, that's not a skill that everybody has, and definitely something that I've had to learn. So it's been an education on every single front for me.
Have you had a mentor to help you work on this?
I've had a lot of great mentors. One of the things I loved about living in New York is being surrounded by all types of musicians, and that was my social scene. Here in Montana, there's great musicians, but I'm also hanging out with copy editors and doctors and lawyers and a great mentor and friend of mine. His name is Tom Britz. He runs the Glacier Hops Ranch, and he grows hops that he turns into hops oil. And his hops have been used for beer at craft breweries all over the state. And then his hops oil is being used around the world. Watching him as an entrepreneur develop his company has just been incredible to see. And he is just so great at understanding how to grow companies. He's been a part of lots of other projects. So he's been a great mentor for me, as have so many other people who are not musicians. So gaining that perspective of non-musicians about business and life and interpersonal skills and all of that has just been another dimension of education that I've gotten in Montana that I don't feel I would have had access to as easily in New York City.
When you graduated Juilliard in 2004 with a jazz degree, mm-hmm. I think you had the first jazz degree.
The first bachelor's degree in jazz.
Did you ever imagine this is where you would be 15 years later?
No, not at all. My life was very, very different back in 2004. I didn't have a life plan back then, but you get on sort of a path of being in the jazz scene and in the music scene in New York, and that was amazing. But this total left turn for me, I'm glad I took it because I've just gotten this education and this exponential growth in all of these areas of life and business that I never would have dreamed for myself ever back when I was graduating college.
Well, looking back now, what lessons would you share with our listeners about being an artist and an entrepreneur?
You can do both. You just have to study. You have to understand the basics of how those two worlds interact with each other. And the musicians who are able to do that are the ones who are the most successful in terms of building a well-rounded career and a stable career. I know a lot of musicians who are artists through and through, and they have incredible careers. I know people who are artists but tend to lean towards the business side. But I want young artists particularly to understand that you can do both, and you should start studying this stuff and start learning about business if you're an artist, and see if that also becomes a creative platform for you. Like I said, business for me has become a canvas. It's become an opus that I've been writing. If you can shift your mentality to think of it that way, it becomes a lot more fun and it becomes a lot more interactive with your side as an artist.
In the past, publications like Jazz Times and New York Times have said that you're superb, that you're an alto sax dynamo, that you have wide stylistic range, and you've been deferring your personal music creative side for a while. And you mentioned you're going to be kickstarting it. So tell me a little bit about what that's going to bring to the public.
I am recording an album on May 7th live at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola in New York at Jazz at Lincoln Center, and I've paired up with a tap dancer who I met in Montana, believe it or not. His name is DeWitt Fleming Jr. Incredible, incredible artist, musician, just overall unbelievable performer. And he was doing a show in Montana with that same theater company that I had come out there with. And we just hit it off right away as two artists that we've just had this sort of clash of creativity. It was so cool. Ever since then, we've said we've got to do an album together. So we're doing an album recording, a live recording at Dizzy's Club on May 7th with a great band. And that's going to be released at some point this year. So definitely look out for that. And I'm looking forward to that. I bought some silver polish for my horn and I got some new key pearls. And I'm going to be souping up my horn and getting everything together and getting my chops back in that frame of mind for that.
Given that, what does the future then look like for the Montana Artist Collective and Groove Trail?
Well, what's great is over the last few years, I've amassed a team of people who have been my other arms to make these projects a success. And I'm at the point where I'm going to be starting to hand over certain operations and certain leadership roles to these people who have been working underneath me. I'm excited to see what their ideas and their energy is going to do for the growth of these entities. You know, businesses are not set in stone. They transition. They shape themselves to the changing market and your changing community and a changing climate. I think that's something that this team is going to keep their thumb on, being that the Flathead Valley of Montana is changing so quickly. I'm just really excited to see what my team members are going to be coming up with for the future. It's kind of hard to hand your baby off to somebody, but, you know, you got to do it at some point and let it fly. And hopefully you've given it a good foundation so it can succeed.
Erica, it's been great having you on the show today. We look forward to your new album coming out.
Thank you.
And we also look forward to see how this baby grows.
I know, me too. I'm like a mom, just like, they've got to fly the nest. And hopefully it all is in good hands, but I have no doubt. But, you know, at least at this point, things are going really, really well. So
thanks for joining me here today.
Thanks, Arnie.
I appreciate your listening to Can Do Lessons from Savvy Montana Entrepreneurs, produced by Autumn Barnes and Beth Ann Austin in association with Montana Public Radio. For comments, recommendations for future guests, or general information, please go to mtpr.org. There you can also find previous guests' contact information and content from all our shows. Listen next time when our guest will be Pat LaPointe, angel and venture investor, board member for emerging tech companies, and author of Marketing by the Dashboard Light. I'm Arnie Sherman, wishing you peace and prosperity. Production support for this Can Do podcast comes from the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation, dedicated to investing in people to improve the quality of their lives, and from the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans, and from Blackfoot, providing communication solutions for Montana businesses, plus opportunities like C2M Beta, an innovation lab aimed at helping startups thrive. C2MBeta.com.